Morning, Doug.
Morning, Tim.
Guess we'll give Beth a couple more minutes to join us. I suppose it's possible, Beth, she might have another meeting this morning, or maybe have forgotten that we're starting at 9:30 instead of 10:30. Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning, Tim. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
You sound like you're in a car or something.
Oh, I'm sitting at my desk. I'm got you on speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Hey, Kendra, are you aware that Beth might have another meeting, or is she?
Not that I know of. I can send her a text.
That'd be great. Thank you. Doug, is the wind blowing out of your place?
Yeah, I went out and raked early this morning, so yeah, it'll probably, and it's just starting right now, so yeah, it's getting ready to blow my windrows apart, so yeah.
Nice.
All good, yeah. Just well, practice.
Well, it dries them out more quickly.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, not baling straw, that's what all muddy almost baling straw right now.
Hi there.
There you are.
Here I am. Just FYI, I'm still trying to track down these CDPHE people. So if the woman calls me back, I'm going to jump off and go talk to her.
Okay.
I will tell you, every single person I talk to is like, well, let me put you in touch with this other person. And I'm like, how hard is this? It's like the worst bureaucratic experience I've ever had, which is really saying something.
I think I've had worse, but...
Well, you haven't been dealing with this. It's pretty crazy.
You know, it's one of the things that actually has irritated me. I've been down there several times, they have such incredibly tight security to get in and out of the building and to see anybody. And it just makes you wonder why they feel the need to have such a high level of security.
At CDPHE?
Oh, yeah. You have to.
Wow. See, I guess I'm not surprised. I mean, between oil and gas.
Yeah,
and, sure they get the business.
I mean, it's easier to get on an airplane than it is to go and have an appointment down there.
Well, your beard is looking great, Tim.
You like it?
I do.
Getting there. I'm glad somebody does. I know my wife doesn't. Okay. Let's go ahead and get started. I think we have everybody here we need to have. Mark, I believe this is your time.
Good morning, commissioners. One of the things that we wanted to do this morning is walk you through a very timely update relative to the FY20 budget and where we stand relative to revenue streams, some other aspects of the budget that I think are very important and very topical. You may recall that the last time we really talked about this.
Hey, Mark, can I interrupt for just a second?
Sure, you bet.
Sheriff, are you here for the budget discussion?
Actually, I was here for the legal part of it. I didn't know if we were going to have some questions about the issue that I sent you the email on last week, or if we're just going to wait until Eric gets back from his meeting. So,
yeah, on our agenda, it shows a 10:15 item. And Mark, I didn't think we were going to be discussing anything but your update, and especially the budget between now and 10:15. So, hey, Garrett, maybe if you came back at 10:15, then that's the time we could have that discussion. Although Eric is on the line right now. Eric, do you want to chime in?
I just joined, so I haven't been listening. Sorry about that.
Sheriff Wiggins has joined us, and I was making the suggestion that he just come back at 10:15, at which time we will likely have the discussion that he's interested in.
Does this concern Senate Bill 217?
Yes. I didn't know if you guys were going to discuss that this morning at all, but if you were, I was just going to join in on the conversation.
You know, Garrett, I talked to the board on Friday, and my suggestion was that if you were okay to wait till the meeting tomorrow that I'm attending with CDAC. It's grown pretty big, and so you know that this is a big deal across the state. And one of the items that's going to be discussed is immunity and possible indemnification and what all that means for the counties. Are you comfortable waiting until we get that under our belt, or you want to do something sooner?
No, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. I just I want to make sure I can get some clear direction to our staff here. I knew you were going to be participating in that meeting, but I didn't know if there may be some prior discussions concerning that. And so I was just going to join in. No, I've got plenty of other things I can do at this moment, so I don't need to sit in and listen to anything that doesn't really concern me.
Well, and Sheriff, call me anytime if you have issues or questions. I know we've had several meetings about it already, but we can continue to do that.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sheriff.
You bet.
Okay, Mark, sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
No, I'm glad we've got the other matter lined out and taken care of going forward. So, Commissioners, the last time we really talked in any detail about the FY20 budget is really, quite frankly, when we made the changes and we had you went ahead and endorsed the amended budget for FY20. So in real terms, it's about 6 to 8 weeks ago. We think it's timely that we have a conversation and discussion about now, right up to the moment, where we stand. And Dan has got not only some really good up-to-date figures for us relative to, again, those revenue streams, but maybe more importantly, Commissioners, at the conclusion of that discussion, I do want to provide the recommendation to you relative to staffing, because you may recall, as I put in my note to the Commissioners yesterday, we did say July 1st was going to be our check-in date to say, where do we stand relative to compensation, relative to personnel resources, and we are going to hold until July 1st to get a better idea where we were financially. I think we've got a much better outlook right now than we did certainly 6 to 8 weeks ago. So I think it's timely to have that conversation, and I'm more than happy to have that recommendation pushed forward to you. So with that in mind, I'm going to kick it to Dan, but one of the things I'm going to do a little bit of a spoiler alert. One of the things that Dan discovered is he got linked into a website called Homebase, which provides real-time, up-to-date information, economic information from each state in the U.S. And Colorado is there, and we've got information that's only days old in terms of where we're doing, where are we on travel patterns, on travel expenditures, And some of that information, which is absolutely fascinating in terms of what's going on right now, in terms of what we think is some evidence of certainly within tourism communities, a bit of an economic rebound. So with that, I know Dan's on. He can jump to that and we can walk through that, and then we're happy to answer any questions.
So just a point of process here. Are we, isn't this the conversation that we're scheduled to have at 11:15 per our agenda?
Good point, Tim. Let me make a clarification, and maybe there was a little confusion. We were going to plug Dan in for that 11:15 conversation during this time, which was the county manager slot. So if we are able to use that now, we will not need to go ahead and dive into that at 11:15. So hopefully that provides a little bit of clarification.
I guess my only concern would be if there are constituents that were anxious to listen into that conversation. I suppose now that we have Zoom, they would always have the benefit of bringing up the Zoom recording and looking at it at a future point in time. And it's not like we're going to be entertaining public comments. So I'm okay with moving forward with the discussion now. Beth, Doug? Yeah, okay. Sounds like we've got consensus to move forward with the discussion.
Okay. Dan?
Okay, so there was attachment to the 11:15 meeting. I don't know if you're looking at that. I can pull it up, or otherwise you can look at that idea.
So I pulled up the attachment from, but Dan, sometimes it's helpful if you share your screen and
okay.
Follow your cursor and understand where you're headed.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it'd be better too, that way pulling up screen, and that way somebody wanted to watch us later, they can follow the method to the madness too.
Good point, Doug.
So I think you guys are looking at the home base data that I was able to find out there on employment and what have you. Is Colorado on there right now, the graph? Yeah, okay. So what you can see is actually, from April 14th, we're, this kind of like, what we got here is employees working, which is, I guess that's a dark purple or something like that. And then we have locations open, which is a lighter purple, and then maybe a turquoise that are hours worked. And this site came for me from the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Just so there is some relationship out there, as far as there was a little bit of credibility that happened with this. But what you can see anyhow, like right now, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time through these, but Colorado as a whole, since, we kind of look like we hit our bottom down here somewhere around April 15th or 14th, and then we're seeing a nice trend going up on this graph out here. And these little valleys that you see out here, that's a weekend. They don't track the data on the weekend, so that's what's going on with that. And then this going through quickly on some of these food and drink, it's interesting that this one's even picking up even through the middle of when pretty much all these establishments were, shut down to, except for curbside pickup and stuff like that. We're still seeing an increase off the bottom here for food and drink. And then retail, that one's, geez, that's really gone up quite significantly. I think this is Memorial Day weekend when we had the big spike right there, Dip Valley. And then we're not all that far away from actually zero. So that, another positive trend. Home repair, not quite as aggressive, but it's still going up quite significantly. And beauty and personal care, well, that kind of went off the charts. Apparently people need some haircuts, Tim, or beard trims, whatever out there. You have an opportunity now to deal with this. And then leisure and entertainment, this is another one. I'm sitting there going, looking at this, and I'm going, wow, look at how much this got. It actually surpassed where we are at zero. I don't exactly know what's going on out there, where people are, entertaining themselves and leisuring themselves, but it's definitely a positive trend. And then we got professional services where, the locations opens that, because kind of, I think these are, like accountants and lawyers and stuff like that. And they're not necessarily, they're working from home, but they're employing people. So that's an interesting trend too. And then transportation, this is probably the least favorable of them. It's kind of hovering down there at that minus 60. And I think there's not nearly as much, people aren't buying as many goods to be shipped and stuff like that. And that's what I think we're seeing there. But in any, overall, I think we're seeing, the employment picture is definitely picking up and things are positively there. And then for this graph or for this chart right here, I'm kind of, this is actual to actual for our governmental and business activity major revenues out here. And you can see where you got almost a $600,000 decrease. That's year to date 2020. And that's through various different months, like mostly through April and May. But then you can look at where we are with our budget. We're having a couple there, four of these items right here are having to do with basically executive orders. So that's specific ownership tax or auto use tax and motor vehicle fees that are these three that are negative right there. And then you have HUTF where people just weren't able to drive as much and that kind of thing. But, then we have some other positive numbers. So overall, year to date, when I looked at where we are in some of the data as far as like with auto use tax in June, and the data is further back in here, but when I look at June, it has a 17% increase for June. And that's, that was year to date as of the 25th. So we have actually four more business days out there looking at that. And then clerk fees. And then we have another increase on motor vehicle fees. We also had motor vehicle fees that are increasing out there. And and then SO tax, I'm thinking that's going to be a similar event because we don't get that. That goes through property tax distribution. And we'll get that in about mid-May. Mid-July, I'm sorry. But we're looking... I think these are some positive trends. Let's put it that way. It's not like they're going down and down and stuff like that. And then when we look at here's our COVID budgets. This is what we.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
Dan, back up to that page. So those three items you mentioned, the SO tax, the auto use tax, and
motor vehicle.
And the motor vehicle.
Yeah.
Those negative numbers are as a result of timing. Because of executive orders that allowed the payment of those taxes to be delayed. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, exactly. And we can see the trend where it's actually starting to pick up in June and that kind of stuff for all three. For two of those, that auto use tax and motor vehicle fees, we can actually see those being picked up and that kind of thing. So,
all right. Thank you.
So Dan, I just have one quick question. Why are you predicting such a significant recovery for the building use tax versus in the green box versus what's in the blue box?
Okay, that's year to date. Okay, year to date, actual to actual is what you're seeing in the blue box here.
Yeah, that looks pretty far down.
What we've got going on out there is that we had a lot more building use tax happening in 19. You can see that right there. We didn't predict as much use tax happening here year to date. So this is what
you know, I see.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, right there is what's going on. We didn't, budget to budget or actual.
Actual to actual. Okay, got it. Sorry, I was thinking the right hand side was a projection, but okay,
This is historical over here.
Yep, so, got it.
Yeah, and this is trying to look a little bit into the future, but not well. We're just looking year to date, actually.
I got it. Thanks, Dan.
Okay. All right. So overall, I think we're looking, pretty good, considering where we, what we were looking at, say, 2 months ago or three.
In that. So Dan.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, I know I'm surprised. I assume that you're surprised as well. And I guess the question that I would have, how much of this good news has been engendered by the government money that came through in terms of unemployment benefits, the $1,200 check that folks were given, and the additional $600 a week in unemployment benefits, a lot of which is about to run out.
Yeah, at the end of July. Yeah, a lot of that is. And I would say that, a lot of people are using that money, and I can only hope that, when that money runs out and we can see these trends as far as employment, that, there's going to be some blending of people coming back to work and that kind of stuff. And, just by looking at how many people are in the county, over the weekend and during the week, and people are showing up here. it's one indicator. Whether or not these numbers are going to hold true or not, that's still yet to be seen. There's a significant amount of uncertainty out there. Sales tax, we won't get May sales tax until next month in July, about midway through. And I would anticipate that to be not a very good month, but just seeing how many people are showing up here and stuff like that. We're not lodging is even though it's like, typically during the summer months, we have 60% occupancy, somewhere around that. But even with the 50% ban, the 50% limit out there, that's not such a bad thing. We're only off being able to accommodate that 60% or something like that, if those people are showing up. We'll see. But right now, given where we are, it's hard to say right now that we would be, that it's, and there's always the idea that we could have a second wave come through and we might have to shut down, which I'm not hoping on, but it's a possibility. And that would turn some of these numbers again south. But right now we're looking okay. Let's put it that way.
So I think what you said is good, Dan, except that there is no 50% limit on lodging. And they're expecting to be, they're expecting to be at like 20% capacity because there's no Triple Crown and some of those big events that typically run their summer. I don't think that impacts what you just said, but just so you're operating from the correct information.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking it was like those larger buildings. Okay. I'm wrong. Okay. Not a problem. In any event, one of the other things is going on is that, okay, they don't have Triple Crown, but people are going someplace to, given those drafts, they're going someplace to do something that's, some kind of entertainment and stuff like that. They're not staying at home. Just by the number of sure cars that we got around this place and stuff like that, and people walking around and what have you out there. I mean, they may not have a soccer tournament to go to, but they are recreating somehow. They're trying to get outside. So, or outside and someplace else other than where they've been for the last few months. So.
And Dan, I'm wondering if we could underscore one of the points that we talked about on Friday, and that is May sales tax. We really truly believe, commissioners, that May is going to be an anomaly. It's not going to be similar to what we saw in April, and it's not going to be similar to what certainly we're going to see in June. But because we are in somewhat of a transitional month, we believe that it's not really going to be reflective of a lot of the trend lines that we're talking about here. So I don't think we're necessarily, unless we're incredibly pleasantly surprised, I don't think we're going to see the same 2% bump that we saw in April. And part of the reason for that bump, commissioners, is as we kind of reanalyze things, is that there was as you may recall, the state had said that there would be given a grace period for the remission of sales tax. So what from March? So what actually April reflected some of that. Now, ironically, the city of Steamboat Springs, which collects its own sales tax, did not provide that window for remission. And so they found out that their sales tax was down about 25-26%. So we got a bump in April. We don't think we'll get that same bump in May. So when our May numbers come through, I think, again, it's not going to be a very good indices for us going forward. I think June will be, as Dan said. I think June is going to be a real bellwether for us.
Just on this next, any more questions on this sheet? Okay. And this one here is our COVID budget as far as major revenues and how we're doing against where we are with actual 2020. So again, we're almost 2% ahead or almost $300,000 ahead of what we have in the COVID budget. And that's still, we still have to see how that's going to work out there. But again, we still got some of those, motor vehicle fees and specific ownership tax and HUTF that's given us some opportunities out there. But overall, we're ahead of that budget too. So, so in the end, I think I'm trying to support where Mark is at with his presentation and why I think we need to look at this probably like on a month-to-month basis, with our revenues and what have you out here. And then like just how the, how the whole, you know, the COVID thing, as far as like, you know, number of cases and, you know, how the hospital's doing and stuff like that, and make decisions as we go. But right now, I think, you know, we're still doing okay. Let's put it that way. And the rest, I didn't, you know, I give you a bunch of detail in there. This is kind of summarizing all that detail. So I don't plan on going through each one of those sheets with the major revenues and that kind of thing, but just to give you some flavor that what's going on here. So Dan,
commissioners, go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Dan, back to the sales tax. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit that I'm somewhat confused. Go back to the screen that shows the sales tax. Mm-hmm. So year to date, we're actually in a favorable position on sales tax.
Through April.
Through April. And you said that some of that positive number in April was as a result of some delayed reporting of that tax. Is that correct?
What happened there is, okay, there, you know, March sales tax collections were allowed to be collected a month later. And that was what, okay, so that's why they were basically, you know, we saw such a big jump in April. I should say actually February sales tax were a month later. And then that's why we saw, you know, a very positive number in April out there. So we're dealing, I think, you know, now with the same, you know, what revenue we would have collected and what have you out there for that time period, April year to date. And that's where we came up with the, you know, basically our budget, you know, being 2% greater than
right. What, no. You know. No. Okay, I understand that. And okay. Then we haven't seen May numbers yet.
No, we won't. We won't get May until 2 weeks. What is May? May it will get that in about the 8th of
second
July.
Week of July. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but in the meantime, we do know that, excuse me, that the city of Steamboat, they do have their May numbers, and they're seeing a 20% decline. Is that correct?
Well, what they reported in the newspaper, that was through April. That was April's numbers.
So what's the explanation where Rauk County, through the month of April, would be a hole or even actually a little bit to the good, and why wouldn't Steamboat be in the same position? I mean, isn't most of the sales tax collected in Steamboat?
Yeah, what I've looked at here is, okay, so this is, okay, year-to-date April, and when I look at, like, okay, we're not – how the city does their classification of say vendors and that kind of thing is different than what we get to use because we have the state numbers and that kind of thing. But if you look at like our accommodation, short-term rentals and lessors of real estate, actually that area right there, we actually broke even. We're like 1% ahead in that area. We saw like $654,000 of sales tax from let's just call that area accommodations. And it's about $5,400 greater. I mean, that we broke even. There's no big, I mean, that's just pretty amazing to me that even we, you know, when we shut down a good chunk of a half a month of March and then most of April, I mean, we still saw, we broke even. What, I mean, that's just what we did out there. And then the two other areas that, you know, like saw differences were out there was, you know, we saw a $91,000 decrease in food services. That was to be expected given, you know, basically shut down restaurants except for curbside pickup and that kind of thing. And then sporting goods saw a $17,000 decrease. So two big
again, Dan, to my point, mm-hmm. It sounds like Steamboat through April experienced some significant decline in sales tax revenues while we did not. I don't understand that.
Their year to date was down, you know, year to date April was down 7%. Okay. As compared to our 2% plus. So I think there's some differences between You know, how, you know, they collect their own sales tax, so there are timing differences out there. And then I would think that they might, you know, they might have potentially aggressively pursued maybe some of these internet sales or the Airbnb kind of things and that kind of stuff. Because, like, I was getting to this number, but like our internet sales, you know, that was from the Wayfair bill where you tax internet sales and stuff like that. That was not a, this was not happening last year during, you know, it didn't kick, the Wayfair bill didn't become effective until July 1st. And we saw almost $78,000 worth of internet sales out there.
So again, my question is, it maybe it's really none of my business because we're talking about county revenues, but doesn't it stand to reason that the news for Steamboat is better than what they may have been thinking 2 months ago or a month ago?
Oh yeah, I would, yeah. For Steamboat, for both of them. Yeah, I would say for both of us, it's better.
So,
I mean, we didn't, I think we were anticipating a lot larger decrease here, given that we'd be, you know, what, a month and a half into, you know, the shutting down of the economy and that kind of thing. So I think, yeah, this both sides are have to be somewhat pleasantly surprised.
Beth?
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know exactly the nuances of what's going on with Steamboat, but your question makes sense to me, which is how the heck could we be up when they're down? I mean, wouldn't they track together? Which I think is what you're trying to ask. I do know that they have extended their sales tax deadlines multiple times. I'm wondering if that is actually what's going on and if they'll see that tax come in a later month. I don't know for sure, but I know that they've done that multiple times.
Well, I'm happy for Steamboat. I mean, I'm happy for us because this looks better than I think what we expected, but I'm also encouraged that the news would be better for the city of Steamboat as well. So,
right. And Beth, to your point and well made, there truly is a lot of differences between state collection of sales tax and home rule communities that collect their own. And I think that's really, to get to the bottom line of your question and Tim's, I think that's the basis of why we see the differential is because of the different collection points. Now that'll true out probably as we get through all of these delayed reporting and a lot of the other nuances that have occurred within the last 8 to 10 weeks. And we should be back to maybe more of a parallel line in terms of where things are going in terms of sales tax revenues.
Thank you.
I think the bottom line kind of goes back to what, and Dan has told us now about this a couple of times now, is that, you know, yeah, it's been off a little bit from the normal, but it's been backfilled because of the Wayfair thing and collecting sales tax on the internet stuff that we weren't getting before. So
yeah,
kind of got a little double, it was a blessing in disguise, but now it's a great thing and kind of fell in the hole. So if we can get back our sales back into the regular thing. And again, for us, the 1% sales tax isn't as much as 4% for the city. So makes a big difference for us.
Yeah, I mean, thank God that got passed and it shows that people are still buying things. And I think a lot of that has to do with the government stimulus. Of course, the bad news is that a lot of that stuff that's being bought and generating sales tax isn't going through our local businesses.
Yeah, but at the same point in time, I mean, during COVID, people were staying at home and buying. UPS and FedEx were the only ones running.
Yeah.
So they were the deliverers of all this stuff. So, yeah.
So, I guess, I mean, I don't want to short circuit this conversation, but I think, you know, we had the opportunity, Dan, to look at what you at this attachment, and I went down through and some of the detail was pretty interesting. But the bottom line is, Mark, I believe that you're, I mean, I think you already made the recommendation, is that we don't do anything with, we don't change anything in terms of employee compensation, at least until we come back and revisit this at some future date. I saw that you had maybe recommended sometime in October But then I hear Dan making a pretty good recommendation that we maybe look at this on a monthly basis rather than waiting 2 or 3 months.
Tim, that's exactly right. I think we need to continue to monitor this and do so very diligently month by month. There's going to be various trend lines that we want to continue to pay attention to, but you're right. My most important recommendation to the commissioners this morning is, based upon this information in our latest updated fiscal data, I believe at this point in time that there would not be a reason that we would make changes to our existing employee compensation schedule. And that would include also, commissioners, as I also included in that note, I believe the hiring freeze is still prudent at this point in time. Now, of course, we have an avenue for any waivers or any variances to that, and we certainly will make that available to all departments where they demonstrate that need that meets the criteria, and I will bring that forward to you. But I think for now, I would recommend two things. One is that we don't change the current employee compensation schedule, and number two, that we keep the hiring freeze in place. And the last sub-recommendation is, at a minimum, and Dan and I talked about this, we come back October 1st and we have this same conversation, because I think at that point we'll have another 3 months under our belt. We'll have the summer season primarily under our belt, and I think that's another good time to kind of check in and see where we are.
Questions, comments, commissioners?
That all sounds great to me.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess I'd have to say it also. So, you know, government at its best, you know, the best action is no action. So I think we're doing the no action. And so I love that. So, I mean, you know, the other alternative was a less pleasant one. So, no, I'm really happy to continue moving on, you know, and we fiscally responsibly monitor all this thing and move forward. That's tickled to death. And so I hope it continues on. It's definitely not like it was in 2007 and 8. So.
Well, the eternal pessimist in me thinks that, yes, this is great. I'm really happy that we're not looking at as dire a situation as we thought we were going to be looking at. But I would say there's definitely the issue that Dan talked about. If we have a resurgence, I mean, when we think of 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were in a great place regarding disease prevalence, and things are looking a little bit different around the country. So we shouldn't get too comfortable with this current state of affairs.
Tim, you're exactly right. I think the watchword is, you don't let your guard down. The only other thing that I would add as a corollary to Doug's comments, again, I mentioned this briefly, in meeting with the other county managers on Friday morning in the other resort communities, Summit, Eagle, Pitkin, Garfield, they're seeing these same trend lines, and they're also very, very pleasantly surprised. They did not think this was going to be our economic circumstances, but they're seeing the same amount of traffic. They're seeing the same amount of people in stores and shops, people on the highways, and seeing this recreational rebound, if you will. And so we're in lockstep with the other counties as well that are seeing some really a ray of sunshine out of what was some pretty dark skies back in March and April.
I'm a dark sky kind of a guy, so I see a few clouds on the horizon.
I don't think we should underestimate what Doug was talking about, though. People at home who are buying stuff on the internet, too. I mean, I don't think it's 100% the tourists coming in and buying things in shops and whatever else. I really think there's probably a big component of people continuing to buy things that are delivered to their homes that probably makes a big difference on those sales tax numbers too.
Absolutely does.
Yeah. And someone mentioned a little bit ago, I think actually I heard Sonia talk about it. Maybe it wasn't her, I don't remember. But anyway, just that, you know, during mud season, when typically we all would be traveling, people stayed home. And so in some ways there may have actually been more activity than we usually would see during mud season, because people were here and they were maybe eating, buying food from restaurants, or they were ordering things online or whatever else. I mean, I don't think there's any way to know 100%, but there's a lot of factors here.
Well, the nice thing about most of this, I think everybody, you know, most everybody kind of went into this thing fiscally, you know, if you were going to be in a healthy situation fiscally, we were all, I think most everybody was in fiscally healthy situation, or unemployment was down to 2% or whatever it was. And so, you know, it's not that way now, but again, so, I mean, people came into this thing with some money in their pockets, and they were, and they're so still trying to figure out how to take care of their fix and whatever to get, you know, to buy things. So, I mean,
so you know, what's interesting about this now, and I, there's no question in my mind that we did the right thing when we put the delay onto our capital expenditures, but it is kind of begging the question, at what point would we want to revisit some of those capital expenditures? You know, I don't know. I don't think today is the day that I would revisit them, but if the trend lines continue in the right direction, there may be some things that we should go ahead and buy that we put off. I don't know. Just
but Tim, isn't it mostly roads? I mean, and aren't we kind of getting into the time where we can't just reverse course on a road project?
No, there's a lot of equipment in there, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, we have the luxury of being in pretty good shape with our capital program that, like Dan Sternad said, pushing the pause button for 1 year really doesn't have a lot of negative consequences. So, and I suppose Dan has also said, and we all know this, is that cash is king when you're in any kind of a crisis situation. So it's probably pretty prudent to hang on to that cash and see how things wash out during the course of the year.
Yeah, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. I think I would hold course on the capital side for quite a while yet, actually, at least for this year. Yeah.
All right. Do we have any more questions or comments for Dan? Dan, I'd just like to thank you for the information you bring to us, and maybe it's a function of me having been here long enough that I know how to read your spreadsheets now, but but it does seem like pretty digestible information that's that we can use to inform how we move forward. So thanks for that.
Okay, you're welcome.
So I have a question then. So we have that discussion, and we kind of had it, and I don't know, either I'm confused or something, but about the budget changes, you know, and whether we actually did any amended budget, Dan. So and we need to kind of answer that. So are we going to go through a process of doing supplemental budgets with the reduced, or we kind of approved it in concept and everybody's going to abide by it?
We actually, okay, that one meeting we had, we actually approved a supplemental budget for all the COVID adjustments out there.
There you go, Beth. You're
That's
right.
That's what you guys get for doubting me.
Oh, sorry. I'm laughing too hard.
I mean, can I just say that when we're in a group of people and I'm the one whose memory is being relied on, maybe you should listen to me?
So this is not the time for ageist comments. I don't think that's appropriate. So.
Good thing we're all not the
same
room.
That's just your interpretation, Tim. That's definitely not what I was implying.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
I have an elephant memory. I just must not have been there at that meeting there in whole function. I wasn't there in whole function.
So
it's all good. I've forgotten things a couple of times, but...
So what that means, you know, like if, you know, if we have somebody who thinks that they're, you know, like we've done the supplemental, and if they think they're going to spend more than what their budget's been adjusted for from the supplemental budget, then they have to come back in and we have to do a supplemental budget to basically increase that department's budget.
A supplemental, Very nice.
Yes.
So all the, I mean, I guess I haven't been in on the department head meetings, Mark, either, but I guess all the department heads understand what their budgets are now. I mean, are quite clear about that.
They do, Doug. And so, for instance, here's a good case in point. Kathy in the HR department has found a really excellent harassment training program that we would like to deploy. And we'd like to do that soon. It's $10,000 that had been in her original budget, but now is no longer in the budget because of the amendment. So what she'll have to do is we'll bring that forward to you and ask that we add the $10,000 into that budget. So there's a good case in point of where we had a change due to the amended budget, and now we need to ask the question going forward.
That sounds good. Yep.
All right.
The only other thing, we do have to advertise those supplemental. So that's a little, takes a little bit of, well, it takes scheduling. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right, Dan, thank you very much. Okay. I think we're ready to move on to our legal update. Eric, are you with us?
Cool.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. And I guess before you get started, is there going to be any need for us to go into executive session today?
No, sir.
Very good. Thank you.
It wasn't on my list, but thank you, Mark and Dan, for talking about that harassment training. I think I would very strongly encourage that to get in place and kicked off. We didn't have an opportunity to do this year's training for those that were scheduled to do it for the two-year sessions. And I think it would be extremely valuable and help protect the county if we went forward with the training for all department heads and supervisors if possible. On my list is to give you an update on the Walmart personal property tax appeal that is currently scheduled in the district court here locally. There was a request by Walmart to consolidate, if you will, all of the cases that they've filed across the state in the various district courts into one single case that would have been heard by the Supreme Court pursuant to a rule that we call multi-district litigation. Well, the Supreme Court heard argument on that a week or two ago. The counties opposed the MDL, while Walmart obviously wanted that to occur so that they could save their resources for one trial rather than 50 or so. It's not quite that high, 36, I think. But the Supreme Court panel denied the request, so the cases now still reside in the local district courts. Our trial is scheduled for next year. So just want to give you an update on that. I did a listserv question. I just got another response here, it looks like, while I was talking about the case, and asked if any of the counties are using outside counsel to represent them at the district court level. And so I do intend to talk to an attorney or two about that possibility, what that would look like, what that would cost, obviously. I don't have any intention in asking you to go forward with that. I just want to feel it out and see if it is a possibility. I can't tell you how extremely disappointed I am with this surge in virus activity, and very, very disheartening, and had long conversations with Carrie over the weekend about that. So I'm just trying to prepare into what I think is going to be a very problematic flu season next spring, which is when this trial is scheduled. It's not going to go away, apparently, unless we can all gather what I guess is called herd immunity between now and then. Next on my list is the Moffitt County Public Health Director IGA that we have. Doug, I see you smiling, kind of. Did you have a comment about
it's
Walmart?
It's a smirk, Eric. It's a smirk.
The virus? No. Okay.
I didn't have a comment. Yeah, so the Walmart thing, yeah, it's like, yeah. Whatever.
I would discuss further with you if there's any opportunity or option of doing that. I gave you an update last week about what's going on in human services suddenly and with new cases. So that's always a burden, of course, and trying to predict those or be prepared for those is just impossible. The Moffitt IGA, I have prepared, and Kendra helped me prepare a notice to Moffitt County. This would be the formal notice to them of the termination of the IGA. I told you on Friday that I had reached out to Becky Tyree, the attorney for Moffitt County, and I still haven't heard back from her. I did follow up my phone call to her with an email and did a courtesy notice that's our intent. I did ask, you know, if they need anything from us, just to please have a conversation with us going forward, and that we would like to terminate the IGA prior to the 60 days that's required by the agreement. Again, assuming they're okay with that.
Hey, Eric, I think I vaguely recall when I was talking with Don Cook that Becky may have been on vacation last week, so she may just be getting back into the office today.
Okay, thanks for that. Johnson Ranch, we have progress. Recall that this is County Road runs through Johnson Ranch out west, and there were the 35-acre parcels that would have been impacted by the claim of the road, detracting from their acreage, would have put some of them or several of the properties under 35. And our attempt to resolve it via a subdivision exemption plat has mixed results. They still claim, the owners still claim, that they could not get bank approvals. There were only four at the time that had mortgages. And so our typical process would be that the mortgage holders would have to sign off on the plat as it gets recorded, and it does impact the properties, at least in chain of title. So we slated June as a sort of check-in time to see how they were doing, and they didn't do well with the banks, and more excuses, more reasons why that didn't work out. And keep in mind that because they are considered to be 35-acre parcels, they're not subject to our subdivision regulations normally. This was sort of a fix in trying to get them what they need, which is 35-acre parcels, and us to get what we need, the county to get what it needs, and that is secure ownership of that right-of-way. So we have met in the middle, and they have crafted a new subdivision exemption plat that does a right-of-way dedication to the county in its full width. So without bank signature, and after several meetings with the planning department and Road and Bridge, we've decided to accept that, short of the bank signatures. Again, they're not subject to our subdivision regulations, so we're not breaking any rules, or we're not violating those regulations. We're just trying to get something recorded that recognizes everybody's interests in these properties. Seems like a reasonable fix. Doug, you were in on at least one of the meetings with the ownership. Do you have any issues or questions?
Trying to get unmuted, sorry. No, I don't have any questions, Eric. I think, you know, you've done a great job, and thank you. And yeah, I think it kind of wasn't our fault, you know, kind of doing what the right thing is, what we need to do, so move forward. So I appreciate it, and, you know, and again, it is what it is, and it's out there, and it's, you know, so I appreciate very much the help, and I think the citizens do too. So I haven't heard from Brian to say it's a bad thing, so I think we're doing good. You're doing a great job on it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
So I have a question for you, though, if you're kind of done with that part. So I must have missed the session with the human services and new cases. So again. So maybe if you want to fill me in online or later, I'll call you and talk about that. Other than the gal that got stopped next to the old M&M auto with the bus, but that sounded pretty strange.
Linnea, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's one of what we're talking about. My message to the board last week was just very, very general in that there's a dependency and neglect trial scheduled this week for 3 days, I think, that Mick is handling. And then in the last week or two, we've had some other cases come in. One required a shelter hearing for the children. One was fortunately a father, apparently a good dad, came up from Florida to get his children, so they're no longer in adoptive care. But that's generally it. Obviously, I'm not going to get into any level of detail here, but Linnea, can you give Doug any different or better update?
I think that's accurate. I do have, there was an emergency hearing, which requires a shelter hearing today. And hopefully, I'm crossing my fingers, after that, we'll sort of be off the peak there a little bit.
So I guess my comment is we kind of knew this was coming. You know, it was just a matter of time, when, where, and how, and we probably still haven't seen nearly the effect that we think we still might see out of this whole thing. And I guess the other discussion, the commissioners also received a email from CCI through the Human Services Board Chairman and Vice Chairman that, you know, maybe if we need some more help there, you know, with Kelly's, you know, if she thinks we need some more help, that sounds like part of that might be CARES eligible as well for that situation. So,
yeah, I had a question about that, and maybe this is more to Mark, although legal may have an opinion, just on whether our human services staff is keeping up with the increase in caseload or whether there is a need for more support there, because we did get that email from CCI just indicating that it seems that around the state there is an increased need for staffing in human services. So we probably just want to check in and make sure they're doing all right.
Yep, Beth, one thing to note is the fact that there has been a little bit of a problem in hiring qualified staff. So they recruited several weeks ago on one position that we pushed forward through the hiring freeze, and they only got two applications. We're not happy with what they got in terms of those applicants, so they went out again. So that's still in the queue right now, and just a little bit of an obstacle going forward, qualified available staff.
Can someone, Beth, if you don't mind forwarding that email from CCI to me. I just picked on you because you're on the left of my screen. And
yeah, no problem. I'm on the left of a lot of things, Eric. I'll send it over to you.
Oh, that. Doug, you're right in the middle, and Tim, I'm afraid you're on the right.
Yeah, it depends on how I feel on any given day, Eric.
It is okay. Kind of interesting. I'm still kind of worried about what we don't know, the issues that are out there that we don't know about. So I guess as your conversation with law enforcement, Eric, and the rest, hopefully we got a clear path to make sure that people are able to, and Linnea as well, so that we have a clear path to make sure we know what we should be knowing.
Yeah, I didn't know if we were still talking about Tim or not when you started that off, but I'm with you. I have one more item to update you on. It's been a while on this one, but slow movement on the Tire Cross Hall Road that is used by Peabody for their operations. And as they wind down their permit and they want to get out of having to clean all that up and do the site mitigation, They want to offer that road over to the county, and it's a beautiful road, apparently, in really good shape. And we've been dealing with the property owners that would have an interest in that. Lately, it was Xcel Energy that we've been negotiating with, and the system that they want to use, basically condemnation methodology, to get the county that right-of-way, at least where it passes through their property, there being Xcel. Peabody would have to facilitate that and pay for it, obviously. I think it's still a good deal for them, and I don't know if Xcel is even asking for something financial. I think they likely are, at a minimum, to meet contractual requirements. But so that has picked up again. I had deactivated that pending matter from my list. So this morning I asked Sue to put it back in activation status, and let's hope it gets somewhere. The goal would be for the county to own that entire stretch of road that I think the county maintains it too. Isn't that right, Doug, already? Yeah. So we would obtain the ownership from the various property owners, including Xcel.
And the state land board as well. State land board's in on it as well. So and a couple private owners, yeah. So no, yeah, we want to do that, but they need to take care of their end, Peabody does, because they're saving on, their condition was to reclaim it. So, that would be millions of dollars. So I would. Right.
Okay. I don't have any other updates on my list. Do any of you have any questions or concerns or issues?
I have a interesting historical question that may even precede Doug's time. Doug, do you recall when there used to be a dump up above Oak Creek off of County Road 27, the old county dump? That was a county road that went up there, was it not?
No, I don't know about that. No, I wouldn't say that was a county road.
Okay.
Well, so then I see now that we got the thing fenced off. I was over there the other day. So they got the thing fenced off. The new owner is building his house on the back side of it. And that exit way off 27 is now the parking lot, the parking area, which is now being fenced off as well. So if we want to have Eric maybe take a look at that, but I don't, or having Mike Morty take a look at it, I doubt very seriously that was a county road. It was still on Peabody's land. And so Peabody probably gave us access, or the mine did, which whoever the mine was at that point in time. So,
and I really don't care much that it remain a county road. I just always get a little heartburn when somebody takes it upon themselves to fence off something that might have been a county road. So it would be nice to know. Higher. There you are. You know all about this?
Not all about it, but about a year and a half ago, we had discussions with, there's two property owners that were disputing that road and access to their separate properties, and who owes what to the other in terms of maintenance, what the county's involvement was, and I determined the county's involvement was none. Exactly where we wanted it to be. And that's what I know. But the dump, by the way, was an interesting issue that's been resolved. Scott Kalman worked with the state to do a walkthrough of that property and make a determination of any future or present need to do more mitigation. As you know, there's been litigation across the state, various counties on the county owned dumps. But we were fortunate, I think, here, and I pretty much have put a bow on that. I don't even ask the question of Scott anymore if there's any new updates about it.
That's very good news. And I do recall Scott making that presentation to us some time ago, and you're right, that was always a source of potential concern. So the idea that it's not an ongoing liability for the county feels like really good news.
Well, when you were looking at that, Eric, I've been up that road and all the way up to our tower site, local tower site, is accessed off of that. So I assume that we still have access, which over that place that is not a county road then.
Easement only.
Okay, that's perfect for me.
All right, I'm glad we got that major issue settled. Makes me feel a lot better when I drive by that. Thank you. I don't have anything else for Eric, do you guys? Okay, Eric, looks like you're off the hook. Thank you very much. So now I guess we're moving along quite rapidly here this morning for a Monday. It's time to move on to our COVID-19 discussion. I guess I'm curious. We had the, was it the 4 or 5 new cases reported late last week? Yep.
It does look like we have one other thing, but it's not scheduled till 11 with purchasing.
Oh, you're right.
But I think we have 20 minutes, 25 minutes. We might as well just get our discussion items out of the way, if it's all right with you.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know we'll be able to make the discussion last that long. Kendra, you might alert Julie that she might need to, we might be ready for her here in the next 15 or 20 minutes. So back to the COVID-19 discussion. I was just curious that we had those new cases reported on Friday, was it? Yeah, it was Friday morning. Are we to assume that there were no more new cases reported on Saturday and Sunday? I'm getting a big negatory from Robin. Go ahead, yeah. Robin.
Yeah, there's so Carrie gave an update on our recovery call. I haven't gotten all the details, but they have 14 contact tracers. We're working over the weekend. So there are more cases. I don't know what the number is yet, but what she said, the contact tracers have been very diligent because they really point to the source of where these came from. And these are, you know, obviously all Route County cases. These are not tourists. That's one of the things she was concerned about, is that as more tourists come into Route County, that people want to blame the tourists coming. And actually, we haven't had an incidence in a tourist environment. So I'm waiting to get more detail, and I'll be sending out a press release later today that talks about the new cases. So I don't know the number. What I do know though, two things that I'm sure she'll tell you more in the Board of Health meeting on Wednesday, but I'll relay to you, is that I started out on Friday, but I'm going to continue this in a press release today, is that because of the the volume of contact tracing that the Public Health Department is doing, we are no longer offering asymptomatic testing because they need the testing for all the contact tracing and the symptomatic. So what I would say is, I know we had this idea to get you guys all tested. We may want to put that on hold.
Oh, bummer.
we may want to put that on hold until we kind of get this outbreak under control. And what she also told me, but we hadn't heard back from CDPHE, Carrie and I spent a lot of time on the phone on Friday, is that we are in an outbreak status. So any cases over 2 from one incident are considered an outbreak. So there's some special language that we're supposed to use. And Carrie has been trying to get all that information from CDPHE and has not. So I've been waiting. I wanted to send something out early this morning, but I'm waiting to, one, get the information on CDPHE to get the numbers. But what I can say to the community is that community testing is only gonna be for symptomatic and people that are found through contact tracing. I said the third thing, I don't know if Carrie mentioned this or not, a frustration that she's had, and we talked on the recovery team, just so you know, is that a lot of private medical providers are not providing testing. So when they identify a contact tracing and they want to test right away, because as soon as they can find these people and test them and keep it under control, since our community testing has been, you know, Wednesday mainly, how do we get more opportunities? So for example, they try to send people to the hospital testing, I think on Friday, or I can't remember if it was whatever day it was. And so they loaded some of the people found through contact tracing with the employee testing that they were doing last week on Thursday and Friday. So that seemed to work. But it's a challenge in the community that a lot of medical providers are not providing testing. So the only source they have is UC Health and us. And so the testing doesn't happen often as rapidly as public health would like to do it. So those were some things. And I don't know, Mark, if you want to mention anything else that Carrie's, I was just giving an update on some kind of the stuff that Carrie was talking about at the recovery call today.
Sounds like we got a lot of problems coming up. We have for them. That's what I want to hear. So,
I don't know if it's all problems. It's just the demand is higher. So I know they've had a good handle on PPE and getting test kits, but obviously getting this outbreak under control is really important. And you know, from the communications perspective, the challenge that we have is that, you know, we can't reach everybody. So the Lodging Association, they like our postcard. So they're going to talk about this at the lodging call, that they may want to do a run of our postcards so that they can send stuff. One of the things that what people are worried about is that a lot of the tourists that they think are coming here are either camping or staying in Airbnbs. And so they're not doing that pre-check-in that the Lodging Association has to remind people about the five commitments. So there's people that we can't capture. We are going to do an ad in the paper that pretty much has the artwork and language that we have from the postcard that we're going to get in the paper. But again, you know, does that person pick up the paper? You know, who knows? It's just a challenge of reaching everybody. So we're trying to look for as many communications mechanisms that we have, but it is definitely, and we have new PSAs running. Thank you, Beth, for that. But again, it's just this constant drumbeat, trying to get people to really pay attention. And I think you heard Mark can reinforce that environmental health is not doing their site visits in the evenings and on the weekends. And we got a couple of emails. I got some personal texts from people that there's still a lot of people saying, shop owners, retailers telling tourists, either the tourists are yelling at them or the way that the shop owners are dealing with it because they don't want confrontation. They say, it's optional. Because it's getting too hard to, you know, educate all these visitors to wear their face masks. So
I think, I want to just, I mean, everything you just said is really negative, and I want to just highlight that I think, first of all, we 100% compliance is not a reasonable goal. And I get those texts too. Like, I was at such and such place and nobody was doing what they were supposed to. I would say the reality seems to be that people pay attention to what they want to pay attention to.
That's true.
And there's a little bit of selective attention. Like, that one person is not wearing a face mask. And so, you know, our observation is that compliance in the community is at a pretty high level. You know, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about masks and I talked about seatbelts, I Googled what the compliance rate for seatbelt wearing is. It's about 89%, which to me, the fact that there are that many people who don't wear seatbelts is very surprising. But you know, I think generally we do have a high rate of compliance, and the higher the better, but 100% really isn't the goal. So I just think we should keep it in perspective and encourage our constituents to keep it in perspective too, because people really want to get worked up about the fact that we don't have 100% compliance, rather than seeing how high the the compliance rate really truly is, especially when you compare it to other places that maybe don't have these requirements in place. I was talking to one of the commissioners in Grand County. He didn't talk about the compliance rate, but I asked him a little bit about, are you guys seeing the same kind of uptick in cases? Their tourism traffic isn't really the same there. I mean, they have a little bit different community than we do. But he said that most of their cases, if not all of them, have actually been linked to workplaces, which to me, you know, people in workplaces are by and large wearing masks and following the rules here. So we see just something a little bit different in terms of where people are getting sick, which I think is interesting. And then the other thing I think we should be careful about is just, it's easy to say, oh my gosh, there's all these new cases. We're so worried, we're having an outbreak. But I think if we compare our ability to respond to that now to what our ability to respond would have been in March, we're in a much, much better place. And it's a lot. It's a lot of work. The scale of it's really hard. It's hard. It's going to be hard work to keep these things contained. But the reality is if this same thing had happened in March, we probably wouldn't have even caught it. And we wouldn't have been able to do all the contact tracing and the testing that is necessary to keep it at a contained outbreak rather than exponential growth in the community. And I don't know 100% if we're going to be able to do that or not, but it's more likely now than it was in March. And actually finding those cases is should be considered a positive rather than just focusing on the fact that, oh, there's all these cases. But the fact that we're catching them is good. So I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything, but I do think we should talk about all the sides of this story and how the place we're in as a community is very different than where we were in March. And there's still work to be done. We're never going to be able to do this perfectly, but I just want to make sure we're telling those stories too. And I understand and I hear your frustration, Robin, that we can't get to everyone. We can't, you know, communication is always that way, right? We maybe get to what, probably 30% of the population in reality, if we're lucky. But I do think we should make sure we're telling all of those stories because there are people in our community who are still very, very worried. While there are people who are brushing off the rules, there are also people who are having a very high level of compliance and are concerned. So we should definitely be talking about all those things.
Well, just so you know, just again, two things. Mark, I don't know if you wrote that down or you had to jump off, but Scott, of the people that, of the locations they went to, it was a pretty high compliance. I think it was like 80%, over 80. So that is a good
84,
news.
84, Robin. Yeah,
84, 84%. Right. Yeah, over 80. So that's good. And then I had sent this to Carrie Ladro, happy to send it to you as well. I saw a national story this morning about contact tracing and the international recommendation was, I can't remember what the amount was, but it translated to 6 contact tracers per 25,000 people, and we have 14. Our preparation is very high. So you're right with that. And we, Carrie's going to plan to give you a presentation on Wednesday to talk a little bit more about contact tracing and, I'm going to focus the press release on Wednesday about that. So yes, there is good news. There is definitely good news, but I think there's the challenge of just, the amount of being able to reach everybody and trying to get all the information, the accurate information out to everyone. I'm in the mom network of teenagers of the age that got the COVID-19, and you can't imagine the texts and emails that I've gotten that misinformation. So just trying to get accurate information out there is something that we're trying to do. And obviously there is that we have the capacity to do this is awesome. And that we were able to test asymptomatic people for a long time from any member of the community is great. And pretty much what Carrie said is that they're catching a lot of the asymptomatic people in the partnerships they have with businesses. So that making sure that employees are safe. So I will I will be more diligent in trying to put good news and bad news, but just trying to share some of the stuff that we had on the recovery call today. So, so there'll be some news. But as you know, Tim, you said it so eloquently on our radio call, is that, you know, just because we have some new cases doesn't mean that the sky is falling. We expected that. So
you're the first person that has ever used that word in relationship to me.
Okay.
Do you think, Robin, that highlighting that we have, that are just the really hard work that public health is doing and the need for us to have adequate public health capacity. I think so much of the conversation has been around the need to have adequate healthcare capacity.
Yeah, but not public health.
Yeah. And just recognizing that those two are not the same thing. And the county, I think, really has an obligation and a commitment to making sure we have the public health capacity we need, because, you know, when we're talking about face masks as an investment in the economy, this is also an investment in the economy, because the capacity of public health is going to be directly related to our ability to keep things open, and to keep outbreaks contained, that sort of thing. So I think telling that story is a good one too, in my opinion.
Yeah, happy to do that. I mean, totally, you know, I spent years working with public health nurses and doctors, so I'm a big advocate, and I agree with you. People do not know the difference between clinical care and public health. So, you know, we can start that drumbeat and try. I mean, we've done a little bit of that, but we'll keep continuing to do that. I've set up some interviews for Carrie, so hopefully we'll get her to do that as well.
Hopefully she has time to do that. Can I just, I know we have Julie, and we can either ask this question now or circle back, but I'd like to hear from Mark about any updates on that staffing side of things. I know that was a big priority to try to figure that out in recent days. So I don't know if you could give us just a quick update on where we stand with that.
Beth, commissioners, there is a quick update. We even worked through the weekend in identifying resources for Carrie and public health that we could deploy as quickly as possible. And please know, commissioners, with your urging and with your advice to us, we are doing everything within our capacity to make sure we break down any barriers and any administrative hangups that we may have in terms of moving this forward. And I want to compliment both HR and legal in helping us with that, to make sure that we grease the skids to make sure that we can do everything we possibly can. Having said that, we have Carrie in her latest update just late this morning mentioned that we've now got four contract worldwide nurses that are assisting us at the present time. We have got one contract nurse that we have put on board as a Routt County employee. Unfortunately, there's been a little problem with a quarantine for one of those individuals, so we're a little bit limited along those lines. We've taken our admit up to the 40 hours as we had provided a recommendation to the commissioners, so we've got our administrative assistant in that capacity. We are advertising for an epidemiologist that can assist us going forward. And that's basically kind of a quick rundown of where we are. Thankfully, worldwide nurse capacity has provided us with some immediate relief and some help in going forward. The only two remaining things that we have is we are still identifying where we need to be on health educators. You may recall this is a conversation we've had with Carrie and with Mo and also with Scott. The health educators would help us in a variety of capacities, but they would be out there on the front lines in doing some of that monitoring and education. So we've got those advertisements out on the street with the help of the HR department. But all in all, commissioners, in the last 72 hours, we've made some real headway in providing some personnel assistance.
That's Mark, great. What about stipends for the contact tracers? I know that was something we were also taking a look at to try to just sure we keep them around.
You bet, Beth. We, in fact, what we're doing is we're trying to identify what the correct wage scale should be. We're using some comparators on that because Carrie mentioned this morning in her email, we're getting questions when we go to hire those people, hey, what's it gonna pay? We wanna make sure we land at the right compensation level that is in line with what we feel that is the description of the job itself, and then also comparative to some other communities when we do our analysis.
I know this is early in the game with CARES money, CARES funding, and I know that Carrie had done quite a bit of work in identifying the needs and costs in the short term and in the long term. But I wonder if we shouldn't be having, or the staff shouldn't be engaged in some kind of an exercise to build a CARES budget from now till the end of the year to make sure that we don't end up in the situation where we've left a couple $100,000 on the table.
Good advice, Tim. We'll make sure that we mention that in our budget discussions in the next 2 days. We'll make sure that we do a sidebar on there, Tim, and that's a good heads up. Thank you.
Yeah, because it's not just Carrie's job to identify all of those costs. She's identified the direct public health costs, but we now know that there's lots of other ways to use that money. So, and the flip side of it, it's probably crazy for me to worry about our ability to spend that money. I mean, it may very, you know, the likelihood is we'll burn through that money, and we want to make sure that we allocate it in a way that makes sense. So.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. There's always the opportunity that we're going out there and we got a blank check, right? So you can figure out, get at the end of the game. So holy smokes, who kept track of that? Kept track of that. So yeah.
Well, and I would just reiterate something that I think is really important, which is, you know, that money can be used for a lot of different things. And it's hard for me to think we should be prioritizing anything over the public health needs. As we're identifying those, I just don't want Carrie to feel like she's getting hung up on, oh, well, we should probably save that money for this, that, and the other. I mean, it should be prioritized for public health. And honestly, if there's money left over from the municipalities, I think we should push for that too. Hey, this money should be prioritized for the direct public health expenses first, before going to other items. I just want to underline that.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you on that one.
But I think it maybe needs to be said, because I do think there's been a little bit of, I don't know if it's in, I know it's not intentional, but just Carrie feeling like, well, why isn't this money being prioritized for public health?
So I think it might be worthy of us to come up with that and write it down on a piece of paper. That is our mission. And with all of that contributes to the opening up of our reopening of our community. So, that should and definitely be that, and, you know, the economics ends of it as well as the health ends of it. So, yeah, whether we do that and put it down on a piece of paper, and this is how we're prioritizing it, why we're doing that, again, goes back to my goals and objectives.
Doug, do you picture that kind of, I agree with you that there would be some value in just writing that down. Do you think that's kind of a memo? I mean, Mark's hearing us say it, but a memo to Mark and to the staff just about these are the priorities for this funding?
Well, it could surely come from the commissioners, yeah.
Yeah, so, exactly. Putting it in writing, like you said.
And yep. It's not just staff, it's the community.
Right.
And I totally agree with everything that's been said, which is the best investment that we can make in our business environment is to control the spread of the virus. That's better than any $10,000 grant to an individual business that might be struggling.
Are we asking Robin to help with putting together kind of a memo that maybe also could have a focus on sharing that out to the community, or
does the community even really much know or care about the CARES funding and how we go about allocating it?
Well, this is sort of probably not so much. This is it, but it's more a matter of like, what are we investing in? How are we supporting businesses? But I would picture personally, it makes sense to me that it's kind of a memo from us to Mark and to our staff, but that could also be just available publicly to share that information. But I don't know.
Certainly to the municipalities.
Yeah.
That's what our expectation is.
So I just like it because it memorializes our position and what our highest priorities are here in through this whole thing. So that's kind of why I like it. And, you know, I guess we can, the five commitments to containment, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's, you know,
our commitments.
Our commitments. Yes, indeed. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with that either. I don't know how or whether Robin, but you know, I do think that we ought to come up with a message. And again, I guess in the long run, and you know, here you listen, this is coming from me actually, really hard to believe that, but you know, that we actually ought to get that message out there to what the commissioners are thinking and doing. So, and
that's an interesting concept. And it makes me, I'm just thinking now that I thought our work was done with the CARES allocation committee when we were able to settle upon a number and come up with an MOU with all of the various entities, that maybe there would be some value in that committee, Mark, meeting on a monthly basis, say, to get an update from the municipalities to us and from us to the municipalities on how it's going, how we individually are going about spending our money. And just that might be a good way to communicate.
I think to the point of what Doug's saying though, the memorializing, I would picture, and Robin, you're the expert here, but this is just my two cents. Maybe it is really a memo from the commissioners to staff about priorities. And then maybe sort of adapting that into a message to the community about, hey, if you didn't know, we're getting this federal money and here's how we are prioritizing the spending of that money in order to support the health of our community, both the economic health and public health. What do you think about something like that, Robin?
Sorry, I was on mute. I've been kind of waiting to see, you know, how the money gets spent, and I was gonna, you know, do a press release on that. But happy to do something pre-spending so people understand why you're spending. So maybe Mark can help me just a little bit, just kind of that I know your priorities. Like if you have 3 or 5 priorities that we need to highlight, because we just put the memo together of the priorities from the strategic plan. So if you have, if there's any words that you want to use for priorities for federal spending, that would be helpful.
Yeah, and I think to Doug's point, the memorializing really comes through kind of an internal memo to the direction to staff about how to allocate this, how to prioritize spending. But there could be just converting that into an external message that's maybe a little more, you know,
right,
external friendly.
Yep.
Would that capture what you're looking for, Doug? I like the idea.
No, absolutely. Again, and then back to Tim's comment too, you know, and this is a great conversation that we can have at the policy meetings as well too, is to figure out how we're, you know, how and what. And again, yeah, we'd pass this memo off to the policy committee and make sure the rest of the municipalities are on board with those goals. Not that we need to make their goals, I'm not saying that, but you know, just so they understand what our goals are and aligned with that a little bit. So,
good conversation. Well, we've kept Julie waiting here for a while, and I see that Jason and Mo are with us. Perhaps we should move on to that purchasing item and then circle back to COVID-19 discussion when that's done. So, Julie, I understand you would like us to buy a replacement for the satellite on the command vehicle. Would you like to talk to us about that?
Sure.
Well, maybe Julie?
Can you hear me?
She's talking, but Julie, we can't quite hear you.
I think I have to talk into this computer, even though I'm looking at this.
But yes.
Anyway, we're here to request.
Good. Go ahead.
That good?
Yeah.
We're here to request the Board of County Commissioners approve the purchase of the satellite hardware, installation, service plan, and 3-year extended warranty for the Communications Command mobile vehicle, and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Ground Control Systems, Inc. in the amount of $37,550.49. Our current budgeted amount for this project is $42,000, so we will not need a supplemental budget. We went out to 8 vendors with IFB 690, and we received 8 bids. 7 vendors. Ground Control had 2 options for us, and we've selected option number 1 because of the equipment that is offered in option number 1 is it's been in service for over 25 years, and service and parts are readily available. The service plan not only includes all software upgrades from Ground Control, but it is also the best value, where they give us 10 24-hour days of service per month. Everybody else was on a per-hour basis. So we feel that this is definitely the best value for the county. And it was, you know, it's not the lowest bid, which generally we would take in the IFB, but we were asking for this equipment or like. And we don't feel that satellite number 2, the Ground Control number 2 option, has been tried and tested. It's only been on the market for just a couple of years. So that's why we selected this. And Jason, you're on the phone. Would you like to speak to this?
Hey, this is Jason. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
So just as a reminder, I think the 3 commissioners know and understand what this is, but the importance of this project. So this allows us to ensure that our continuity of operations plan is up to speed. So if for some reason we don't have county network access, this will allow us to utilize the satellite to maintain our operations for dispatch, regardless of where the vehicle is. In addition to that, it'll also allow us to support emergency operations out in the field, so we can take the vehicle remotely pretty much anywhere we need to in the country and have satellite access. I'm really happy about this. We've been working with IT on the development of it. Matt Jacquard has had a big hand in it. Chris Williams, our technician, has had a big hand in it. Done a lot of research. And working with Julie, we feel like this, while not the lowest bid, just to reiterate what she said, feel like this second option is the best because of the service plan and the equipment. We know we can get equipment parts from anywhere. They have an East Coast and a West Coast shop. So we're pretty happy about that. Julie and I have talked about that considerably. So we think that's the right plan, and that's our recommendation for the number 2 bidder. I'm happy to answer any questions if you guys have any.
I have one. Jason, okay. Is this, would this equipment be transferable to a new vehicle if and when we choose to replace that vehicle?
Yes. Yeah, so there is a rack, if you will, a mounting piece of hardware, and then the controls and the satellite that go on the roof of the vehicle. And then there's control cables and power cables that go down into the inside of the vehicle, and there's equipment mounted in the rack. The rack mounted radio controls and that sort of thing are inside the vehicle, and all that can be removed. Of course, it's, you know, not easily removed. It takes a day to do it or whatever, but yes, it could be removed and transferred to another vehicle.
Thank you. You guys have any other questions or comments?
I just have a comment, Jason and Mo. Thanks for getting this fixed up. You know, again, the way things are going, again, we wanted to have this thing available, and so I appreciate you guys' diligence in making sure that it's out there being a functional piece of equipment that we envisioned it to be when we originally bought it and moved it into service. So
Well, quite honestly, the satellite equipment that we have in there now is 10 years old, and it's like other electronics, cell phones and that sort of thing. It just will not handle the bandwidth that we need right now. It's pretty much useless and has been for 5 years. So there's a good possibility in 5 or 6 years we may be upgrading some of this equipment just to keep up with technology and so forth. So we did have this budgeted in last year's budget and really felt like because of all the other capital projects we had, we delayed it to this year. So like Commissioner Monger said, what's going on now with the pandemic and everything has sort of made us understand the importance of it. So we want to keep it moving and get it done this summer so it's usable.
So really, for the first time, once we get this installed, Jason, our emergency command vehicle will be truly fully operational.
And usable to the fullest extent, yes.
Great. Thank you. Any more questions or comments?
I don't have anything.
Then I would just love to hear a motion.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the purchase of the satellite hardware and installation and service plan and a 3-year extended warranty for the Communications Command mobile vehicle. Authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Ground Control Systems, Inc. in the amount of $37,550.49.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much, Julie, Jason, Thank Mo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank
have
you.
A good afternoon.
All right.
If you have a moment, I had an email that there was a purchasing question around this staffing for that you were just discussing about the public health.
Yes.
Mark would probably know. I don't think any of us were involved in that question.
Oh. Julie, you can disregard, actually. I'm working with Kathy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. We ready to
That was Julie, Tim.
Or Julie, I'm sorry. Are we ready to circle back to a COVID-19 discussion? Sure, why not? We have anything else that we need to talk about today? I have one vague thing to talk about.
I'll just give you an update on the contracts with CPAT, which is that there are no updates except that I continue to say, hey, what's going on? I had someone call me this morning and I'm waiting for her to, I called her and I'm waiting for her to call me back, which is Jill's chief of staff. But in her message, she said something like, I'm going to connect you with the person who does contracts. And I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, literally, this has been happening for a year, from what I can tell from talking to Carrie about it. So we are going to try to get it resolved in the next 2 days. And Mark, I'll keep you in the loop on what's happening there. But if we don't get it done now, it's going to be another year and we're going to deal with the same darn thing. So I'm just going to keep pushing and tell them this is their mistake. They need to fix it, period.
Do you think this is at the point where there needs to be some potentially some legislative intervention at CDPHE?
I have no idea. From what I can tell, that department is just a hot mess, a hot bureaucratic mess. And, you know, I do have some understanding from, I don't even remember where this information came from, but that Jill got there, realized what a mess it was trying to work on fixing it. And then, of course, a pandemic happened. That on top of the changes to the COGCC stuff, I mean, there's a lot of things. And I just don't think there's been adequate time to fix it, in my opinion. But from what I know and understand, Jill knows there's a problem and has been trying to sort of sort it all out since she got there. I just remember hearing that through the grapevine prior to this whole pandemic thing. So I don't really know, but I think that trying to fix it, as with anything, has resulted in her losing a lot of staff too, which we know, I'm sure all of us are familiar with the fact that that happens when you try to fix things that are not working, you lose people. And so I don't know the answer, Tim.
Well, we can't be the, or maybe, I mean, I guess we are in a unique situation where other counties have been engaged as their own public health departments, unlike us, and maybe they don't have the problems that we're having because of our unique situation.
I don't know, but I'm sure Doug could wax poetic about the joys of CDPHE. I mean, they are definitely one of the most difficult departments to work with, right? I mean, it's just an example of bureaucracy that is not working well. And maybe everybody doesn't have to get tangled up in it all the time, but.
You know, it's interesting though, because we've had in the past some success in terms of when Mike Zopf was our environmental health director, getting a grant program for the tire cleanup. And then when I engaged with them for the grant funding to clean up the Royal Hotel, actually, those were a couple of examples of things that went fairly smoothly, you know.
Well, and I mean, if you even listen to the way Scott talks about CDPHE versus the way Carrie talks about it, it seems like maybe on the environmental health side, interfacing with them works a little bit better than on the public health side. I don't know, but that just seems to be the case observationally.
So you remember that this just got restructured probably about, well, I hate to date myself, but it probably about the time when CDPHE got created and Sue Birch then became one of the first directors of that. So this was a whole new thing. And again, so I've had a lot, especially the enforcement side. So it's hard to believe they can't get the advocacy side to working and to hand out money that's already money that's there and that's coming from the federal government to be a pass through, and that the bureaucracy sometimes can get so entwined into the passing out, you know, being the intermediary of getting money out. So, but I've always had a lot of heartburn about the enforcement side specifically without science behind a lot of it as well. So,
but even just anecdotally, as an example of how things don't work, trying to even sort out what contracts exist and who they're going to, they literally have like this gigantic spreadsheet, and there's only like two people in the department that know how to work the spreadsheet. And they don't even have like a database that manages all these contracts. It's just a giant spreadsheet. And so we said, well, don't you have the ability to pull this by county and see what's all the dollars that are going into that county? Even if they're going to different entities in the county, you don't have some kind of way of just querying, you know, your database and pulling that? Nope. No, we don't. Okay. So, you know, it's just apparently though, that's one of the things they were working on was putting this together into a database. And then of course they've gotten distracted by having to deal with a global pandemic. So who knows? But anyway, I'm kind of just complaining, but letting you know that I am being persistent and that I'm going to do everything I can to make sure this gets fixed in the next 2 days.
Great. Thank you very much. And you're welcome for the opportunity to vent your frustrations. I have a question going back to the CARES funding, Mark. So we've got between now and July 7th to enter our MOU and the allocation who's responsible for that?
So real quick, Tim, so we were supposed to talk about the budget thing now or 11:15. I see we have a couple staff members joined us, you know, right there. So I wonder if you want to give them an update so that, I mean, I see Kathy's joined and Mo's still on, Emmy's on and so a bit too. So I don't know if we ought to.
Mark, why don't you provide an update for those staff members that may have thought that we were going to be talking about the budget at 11:15, and we already did.
Tim, happy to fill in the gap. We discussed this morning under the county manager reports the update to the FY20 budget for Rout County, and we walked through a number of very important revenue streams with Dan in the accounting department, and what we feel are some optimistic numbers and some more positive numbers than certainly we had seen 6 to 8 weeks ago. We also looked at some trend lines that were available from a statewide resource that also show some very positive upticks that had not probably been expected, quite frankly, when we first did the analysis of the revised budget for FY20. Based on that information, we've gone ahead with the endorsement of the county commissioners. We will not make any adjustments to staffing and compensation. Given the numbers that we're looking at right now, we will revisit that on a monthly basis, and we'll certainly do a very comprehensive check-in on October 1st. But the bottom line is that we don't anticipate any staffing changes or personnel changes at this time. The hiring freeze will stay in effect, and we'll still have the same protocol in terms of any potential waivers.
That was exactly what I was going to say, Mark. Thank you. So now, hopefully that provides the information anybody that's listening in might want to know. So back to my question about who and how will the entry be made into the DOLA portal for our CARES allocation?
So Tim, excellent question. Tim, Dan and I will monitor that. We will be the responsible parties to make sure that that gets submitted by July 7th, well in advance of July 7th. And I know that Eric is being the facilitator for the signed agreements coming back to him. You may recall that he had asked all the entities, all the other jurisdictions, just send me your signed copy. We'll put that together as a compendium, because of course that needs to be an attachment, that signed cooperative agreement between all the parties. But we will make sure that that gets in the door as quickly as possible, probably on the basis of when we get the last of those signature pages back, Tim.
Very good. Just wanted to make sure that we knew who was responsible for actually doing that.
Well, we all are. I want to say I'm just the collection point. So far, I've only received two, City of Steamboat and Oak Creek. And did yours make it on the agenda? Your signature?
Great question, Eric. Kendra, we need to make sure that we have an agenda item to approve my signature or our signatures on the CARES allocation agreement with the municipalities.
Yeah, so I don't know if Deanna has received, we would need, do you just want it on consent or do you want a discussion item?
It could be a discussion item that may fall under the heading of some of the communication effort that we've discussed with Robin. It might be good to have it as a 15-minute discussion item and approval of signature.
Okay. And then, Eric, do you have a form that you can send and we can upload that? And then I need a communication agenda form, too.
Am I responsible now for making sure this gets moved forward?
No,
that's fine.
Actually, Kendra, I think Mark can prepare the agenda communication form and make sure it gets on the agenda. All you need from Eric is a copy of the signed MOU with the other municipalities.
It'll actually be an unsigned. We all have separate signature pages, and I'm still collecting them. I was just thrown by the question. I'm happy to help Kendra in any way you need.
I think all she really needs is something to attach for our signature.
Okay.
Great. So, Kendra, I'm assuming we can do that by Wednesday, right? We can't hear you, Kendra. You're muted.
I will double check with Deanna. I think we have time on the agenda. I know we do have Board of Health on Wednesday, but we should be able to have 15 minutes. I don't think that'll be an issue.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, back to the COVID-19 discussion. I said I had one vague thing to talk about. So I'll go ahead and talk about my vague thing since no one's jumping in. It's just interesting. I was reading an article in the newspaper this morning about so many companies and institutions rushing headlong into embracing remote working as a solution in the long-term future. And it was just a cautionary article about many have tried and many have failed, and what may seem like a great idea right now may not turn out to be such a great idea over time. So I'm just putting it out there that while we're all in this phase where working remotely seems to be working and really, really well, and it has been working, we just need to be cautious about assuming that that's really a long-term solution for much of our staff. So that was it, just something to think about.
Anybody? I think we're going to be probably extremely conservative as we head in there. So I don't think we're going to open the gates and let the bulls out or whatever. So but I do think we owe it across the board here, even with staffing, just have a good conversation about it, and the management and the department heads and the rest, and how it can be implemented. And it seems like a great idea to me. And again, I'm sure there's some hassles out there or some pitfalls or big wells we can fall into, but I do think that we ought to have the conversation. I do think, you know, and set some parameters around it. So that, that maybe you're not working out there every day for 40 hours a week, but maybe, there's some opportunity for shared space and mutual office space and the rest, and again, be a good challenge to our department heads, knowing where we're at and where we came from and how that all works. And so, and again, I already know what the pitfalls are because we've already been there and had that. So
I would just say, actually, I was thinking about the same thing, Tim, about sort of the long term of remote work and what that looks like. And I think it's definitely true that the way people are working remotely right now is not going to just continue forever. But I would think that there will be changes in, one, employees' expectations about the ability to work remotely, just because they've been able to say, hey, look, I showed that I can do it and I showed that it works. And then from our perspective too, to be able to think about it and figure it out. I mean, personally, I've been just thinking about, man, do we really have to go to Denver all the time? I hope we learn something from this about being able to have some flexibility with that, right? Just as an example. But I had been thinking about, kind of to Doug's point, when is the right time for us to pull out that remote work policy and decide what the long-term changes might be to employees being able to work remotely and what that looks like and what the requirements are and those sorts of things. And maybe it's not quite yet, but it should definitely be on our, maybe it's on the middle burner. It's not quite on the back burner or the front burner yet, but it's there as something that would be probably a priority in terms of updating that policy based on kind of what we've learned and what we've seen through this whole thing.
Well, thank you for that. I just wanted to put it out there as a discussion. One of the things, the we talked about at some point, presumably we will start conducting our meetings back inside of the building. I mean, we know that's coming at some point, but we've also seen just how well Zoom works, especially for public engagement and transparency purposes. And I do know that we had some technical challenges to doing that in our boardroom in terms of the camera setup and things that I don't quite fully understand. But if there's some IT things that need to be taken care of over the next month or two so that we're in a position to actually meet in person again, if we choose to, I'd like to know that someone's thinking about that.
I guess one thing I would say, I know, and maybe they can weigh in on this, I know that Deanna and Kendra had been looking at some of those things just because it turns out that the audio sort of setup where we have been using for people to call in and listen to meetings was sort of jerry-rigged and pretty low quality and pretty limited. And so they had already been starting to look at some of those things. I assume most of that was put on hold for budget reasons, but to your point, Tim, it might just be worth thinking about the longer term, you know, in order to be flexible so that even if we do start meeting in person or when we do start meeting in person, people don't necessarily have to come into the room in order to participate in the meeting. And we're not set up for that right now. So it might be worth just thinking about in terms of us being able to have flexibility. Cause I mean, even just this current situation, we don't really know how long it's going to go on, and there would be some benefit to being able to be flexible. But even after this is over, I think going back to the limited access that the public has had to our meetings would probably not be well received after this is over. So I don't know where that, I guess Kendra looks like she's ready to give us some information about what their efforts have been on that front.
Yeah, so we definitely have started looking into new options. What we have currently is just really outdated. It takes hours to actually get the audio from the machine onto a disc, and it's just definitely not ideal. We were looking into other things, and then that got axed out of the budget with COVID. I can definitely follow up with IT. I think we would definitely be looking at something different now than what we thought we would have been looking at before all of this, especially with the video integration kind of being more preferred now. So I can definitely follow up with IT on kind of a short-term and long-term solutions.
Tim, go ahead.
And it may be that the case could be made that this is the way we should continue to meet, and that this is the right way to do it in terms of interfacing with the public. I don't know. I mean, maybe even if we're in the building, we just sit each in our own individual office at our computer terminal, and that's how we conduct the meeting. I mean, whatever works, so.
So we could have our laptops in front of us at the big chair, and that way we're all being recorded, you know. And you know, I was kind of against the opening and the facial thing, but I really think this has worked out great, and I don't have anything to hide. So
You and I, Doug, were definitely we were in a very close alignment. I recall when Commissioner Hermosinski was suggesting that we have our meetings televised, and you and I were both, this has been an eye opener. And I do think from the perspective of our constituents, this is a good thing, and we should find a way to keep doing this or something very similar to it.
I would maybe suggest that it makes sense for our office to continue working with IT on what they had been working on, which is looking at what solutions are out there and not necessarily saying, yeah, let's put something back in the budget, but finding out what kind of numbers we're talking about in terms of the preferred solution. Because maybe it's something that we just say, let's find the money in 2021 instead, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think understanding what that preferred solution would be and what kind of dollar amount we're talking about would make sense.
I mean, it could be as simple as, just like Doug just said, we could be sitting out there in the commissioner's hearing room, each with our own computer, which would put us on the screen, and provide two or three other computers for people that are presenting and or people that are doing public comment. It may not be a terribly expensive solution.
I'd suggest we let IT tell us what the best solution is, because I, as they've indicated, the last time that they weren't involved, we ended up with that TV on wheels.
That TV on wheels was an awesome addition, and I think that was great.
It's got a lot more use than the screen on the wall with the
It just wouldn't have been IT's recommended way to do that. I think we should let them be the experts.
Let them work in partnership with the building and plant to come together with a great solution. Yes. Sounds good. Okay, that was the only other thing I had.
I'm good. I don't have anything.
Doug?
No, I don't have anything else either. So, yep, we're good.
Mark, anything you need to know?
Tim, just one last thing that, and a housekeeping. You recall several weeks ago, Kathy Nelson in HR provided you with the results of the survey that was done, we'll call it the COVID survey of our employees. There's just a question of whether or not the commissioners are comfortable that we release that information. You recall that she provided for you kind of a summary report with some of the statistics that were there. We're still waiting on the comparators from the other entities that also undertook that survey. We think we're going to get that about the second week of July, but we're just wondering if we could have commissioners' approval to release the summary pages to the both the department heads and the employees.
Yeah, we can release it, and it's Cora available anyhow. So nothing in there we need to hide. So.
Yeah, I'm okay with it going out. That's fine. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, you bet. That's all I have, commissioners. Thank you very much.
So we're reconvening at this Zoom address today at 2 p.m.?
At 2 p.m., right.
Okay, very good.
And you said we're there for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then you'll let us know when we're dismissed?
Commissioner Melton, you can have as long as you like.
So the plan is for us to just make some opening comments, and specifically in relation to the comments that were in the memo that Robin helped us prepare, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Just a note, it's not this Zoom address. It would be the Zoom address and the invitation, the event invite that was sent. So it's not this same one.
Okay. I see that.
Okay, I'll have to find it. I didn't know that. Good thing you brought that up. I didn't know that.
If you accepted the calendar invite, it should be on your calendar.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it's there.
All right. If there's nothing else to discuss at this time, we will reconvene at 2:00.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.